You're listening to The Pulse.
Hey, hey, Fort Stewart and Wynn Army Community Hospital. It's Kevin Larson coming at you with this episode of The Pulse, where we're going to talk about a very important topic, mental health. May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and I'm joined by Lieutenant Colonel Gina Wright, the Chief of Behavioral Health here at Wynn, to talk about why mental health matters, how to stay mentally healthy, and also how healthcare providers need to keep an eye on their own mental health. Ma'am, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Mr. Larson.
So tell me a little bit about yourself. How did you get started in behavioral health?
Well, I am currently a licensed clinical social worker. I've been licensed for over 16 years, but prior to joining the military, when I had my bachelor's in social work, I got interested in working with community mental health. And so my first job outside of my bachelor's degree was working at a mental health facility downtown Indianapolis with low income and indigent population. I have a big heart for those people who are underserviced and have had challenging lives.
Clearly, you are an expert in this field. You've worked both in the civilian side and now the military side. You've seen people at their highest highs and their lowest lows. We're in the month where we're raising awareness of Mental Health Awareness Month. Why does that matter? What is Mental Health Awareness Month?
So Mental Health Awareness Month, its focus is primarily to reduce stigma and raise awareness around the resources that are available for individuals to promote mental health.
So yeah, that stigma thing, that's something that's often been talked about, especially in the military. You know, in the past, there was that question on the security forms where it asked you to disclose, hey, have you ever sought behavioral health, mental health, counseling for anything? And that was always like a hard stop of like, you've sought mental health, we can't trust you with the national security of this country. But now that's changed, and the stigma, it's slowly reducing, isn't it? That people are recognizing it's a sign of strength to seek help.
Absolutely. Even in SF 86, the question 21 that you're referring to, they've kept that question on the application. However, it's prefaced with, if you've sought mental health reasons for deployment-related issues, grief and loss, family challenges, and such, then you are allowed to say no, that you've never sought mental health, because that is a sign that you are trying to improve yourself and to be a better person.
And that's very important. I mean, I myself can tell you that from my own personal experience that I have sought help before, and I've recognized that I needed help, so I've sought help, and it helps. It's important to recognize when you might be at wit's end and you need to talk to someone who's a professional and get that clarity to get yourself back on track to feel mentally healthy. Clearly, we're touching on it. Why is mental health so important? Why should a person seek help when they are having the worst day of their life or a longer period where they might feel depressed or not themselves?
I find it interesting that people look at seeking help for mental health differently than other things that we seek help for. We ask an accountant to help us balance our books and manage our money. We go to a physician to help us with some of our health issues. Life coaches, nutritionists, dietitians, there are all sorts of professionals that are available to help us be better individuals, and clinicians are no different. It's important that we help people be the best that we can, and I think that's a reason why the military services have incorporated mental health techs, social workers, psychologists, and allowed them to be in uniform to work alongside our service members.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm no mechanical expert, so yeah, I take my car to get serviced at, you know, the car dealership. I come to the doctor when I have an issue about something physical. I go to the eye doctor when I have a big floater across my field of vision. So yeah, absolutely, mental health should be no different. It's the whole person. It affects everything. I mean, your mental health can affect your physical health, can it?
Absolutely. Our mind and body is connected. It's funny, especially for individuals who might try medication for their mood, their gut is actually disrupted because our mind and our body, our gut and our brain are very much connected and affects each other.
That's true. I mean, if you take a probiotic, you're changing your biome in your stomach, and that can actually increase or possibly even decrease your mood, correct?
Absolutely.
It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating. So what are some signs a person might need to reach out for help?
Every day we have a normal routine, a normal mannerism, behavior, and interaction. So anytime our norm changes, I think that's a sign that someone should do some self-reflection, take a step back, ask another person what they observe, what they see, so that they can kind of go back to that norm. So to me, a sign is someone whose mood is very different. They may be dropping the ball at work, letting things that usually matter to them, maybe they're not paying attention to it because it's not as important. Just, you know, when things are different and people notice.
So if someone notices those signs and points them out to you, or you yourself notice that you have those signs that something's just not quite the way it used to be, what resources do we have here at WIN to help people get back on track and feel themselves again?
So at WIN, we have the Department of Behavioral Health, which has resources embedded into the unit's footprints, as well as Child and Family Behavioral Health Services at WIN and at Tuttle. The installation has even more resources than the hospital, and those resources are embedded in the primary care clinics, through ACS, ASAP, the Military Family Life Consultants. We have at Fort Stewart more Military Family Life Consultants than other installations. So that is a resource that is easily accessible, and those individuals are in the footprints with the brigades.
So there are people out there that are ready to listen, ready to help if you do need that help.
Absolutely. The chaplains are also another great resource, which are unit aligned, as well as our Family Life Center on post. So if you're looking for someone to help you in a spiritual, through a spiritual perspective, you can utilize those unit ministry teams.
There are resources available. So let's take a short break right here.
If you or someone you know needs crisis support, dial 988. This 3-digit dialing code connects directly to the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, where compassionate, accessible care and support is available for anyone experiencing mental health-related distress. The 988 Lifeline helps thousands of people struggling to overcome suicidal crises or mental health-related distress every day. There is hope. Call or text 988 today.
And we're back. I'm with Lieutenant Colonel Gina Wright, the Chief of Behavioral Health here at WIN Army Community Hospital. We're talking about Mental Health Awareness Month and the resources that are available for people to use if they feel that they need to get back on track, feel like they're not quite themselves, something's just different, and they need some help. But then the people that provide the care, they might themselves need help too, right?
Absolutely. Providers are prone to burnout, compassion fatigue, and even secondary trauma.
Compassion fatigue, what is that exactly? What does that look like? Does that look basically like you walk into the provider's office and they basically just are, I can't take this, you're fine, get out. What does compassion fatigue look like?
Most providers got into the helping profession because they wanted to improve other individuals. And so compassion fatigue, in my definition, is when I do not have the ability, the energy, or feel like I have the time to give an individual who is seeking my professional assistance what they deserve. So it can look like many different things, because it is individual specific, but when we just don't get the satisfaction from our work that we used to get when we first started these helping professions, that's a sign of compassion fatigue.
So compassion fatigue, you defined that. That sounds a lot like burnout. Is burnout similar to compassion fatigue?
Burnout is more physically and psychologically induced symptoms. So burnout is actually a ICD code that we can medically diagnose, encode, and treat for. So burnout is more when now, because of the work that we're doing, we actually have difficulty sleeping, mood changes, maybe we've started some maladaptive behaviors in order to cope with the overwhelming amount of stress that we feel. So burnout is a little bit more serious than compassion fatigue.
So it sounds almost like a gradation, like it could start as compassion fatigue and work its way toward burnout.
Yes, Mr. Larson, sure.
And then secondary trauma, is that where a provider would take on their the person that they're helping, they would take on that person's trauma and internalize it to their own trauma?
So secondary trauma, it's similar to that. The effects an individual who has experienced trauma has, such as re-experiencing nightmares, maybe they withdraw, they have shame and guilt. So the provider starts feeling some of the similar symptoms as the individual who experiences that trauma. So they don't necessarily take on that trauma, but they empathize and start feeling the effects of that individual's trauma as their own.
So that almost sounds like it could be the opposite of compassion fatigue. You're taking on too much of that person who you're helping, too much of their trauma than yourself. That's kind of what that sounds like to me as a layperson.
Yes.
So what tools are there out there for providers to use to assess if they're experiencing any of these things, and how are those things measured?
So there is an online tool that's free to all providers through ProQuo that assesses for all three of those, compassion fatigue, burnout, and secondary trauma. And it gives the results in a simple score and kind of helps gauge where you are with those three objectives. And it's a tool that you can take every month, every quarter, and you can continue to kind of reassess where you're at. So these three possibilities of being a provider and taking care of others are fluid. So these measures can change over time as your conditions and your work environment change, your caseload change, as well as the day-to-day ways that you take care of yourself as a person.
Things that you could do to take care of yourself, you know, there's the standard things of exercise, healthy diet, all those things. And then there's other resources too available, aren't there? What other resources are there for healthcare providers?
The VA has spent a lot of time and energy looking at taking care of their providers and have created some resources that are provided in an app forum. So the DoD has many mobile apps that a provider can download onto their phone and use in the moment that they may feel stressed or overwhelmed. So there are breathing apps, there are life coaching apps, apps that can help with sleep improvement, as well as mindfulness, meditation, anything that you can think of. As we know, there's most likely an app for it. But there is a lot of provider resiliency apps that if you just search online, you can easily find through the DoD and VA.
So you heard it here, folks. Like Colonel Wright said, if you're feeling a little bit of potential burnout, feeling like you might be just on the edge, there is an app for that that will pull you back from that edge. It's out there. You can find it. So is there anything else, ma'am, you'd like to add about Mental Health Awareness Month or about providers and the care they provide and the things they need to watch out for so that they can provide the best care possible?
Yes, I'd just like to leave with the thought that we became helping professionals for a reason, and that it's important to continue to take care of ourselves in order to provide the best care possible for those that are seeking it from us. There's a higher possibility of mistakes, and the quality of care can decrease. And there's all sorts of other research out there that show providers who have compassion fatigue, who are not taking care of themselves, or just individuals overall who are not at the level of their mental health that they want to be, have decrease work satisfaction, and do affect others that they work amongst. So I just encourage everyone to take time to do some self-reflection, maybe take the pro quo survey and kind of gauge where you're at, and then look to your left and right, to your employees, your friends, your families. And if you see anyone who's behaving differently, that their normal mood, their normal interaction has shifted a little bit, to approach them and have that difficult conversation and encourage them to seek the resources that are available.
Absolutely, 100%. It's very important to look out not only for yourself, but for those you work with and those that you love and care for. So, ma'am, thank you for joining me on this episode of The Pulse. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Thank you.
So remember, folks out there in podcast land, seeking help for your mental health, it's a sign of strength. So take care of yourselves. Thanks for listening, and I'll catch you on the flip side.